Hello, everyone. I am Ariana, and I am here with the president and I believe the creator of the role-playing game club here at George Mason University. This is Turtle. He's also the president. Turtle, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Thank you, Ariana. How are you doing today?
I am okay. So, what exactly is the role-playing game club?
So the role-playing game club at George Mason University specializes in the creation and the playing of various tabletop games such as Dungeons & Dragons 5th and 3.5. We also play games like Shadowrun, Pathfinder, and Catan, and we also encourage our members to create their own games, our homebrews as we like to call them in the club, and then we perform them for the various members that come in every week.
What exactly does it entail?
So each game is essentially, we have what we would call a dungeon master or a game master. They create the story, they create the characters, essentially they create the entire world. And through nitpicking through every detail, they essentially create a story that the players of the game play through, and they act out, and they act out each individual character that they essentially make beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And so through playing, they might encounter things like you have to fight a dragon or you have to seduce a bartender into letting you have free drinks because you can't afford it.
Has that actually happened?
Oh, yes, absolutely. There's been all kinds of crazy things that go down in any kind of game, from Pathfinder to Shadowrun. Even though the genres are very different, all kinds of craziness happens no matter what.
Oh, boy. So usually where do you guys meet?
We meet in Hampton Roads on the 6th floor in the common rooms currently because we don't have a designated meeting space as we are a new organization.
When? What time specifically?
We meet every Saturday between 7 and 10 p.m. However, those times are fairly variable as some people like to take their stories a little bit longer.
So how long will these stories usually take?
Well, on average, a full campaign can take anywhere between one session to my longest being 12. It really kind of depends on how much time the Dungeon Master would like to hold each session for. For instance, I hold mine for about 2 hours on average, but my longest running has been about 6 hours straight.
Six hours? Are you kidding?
No, not at all.
What?
It was fun. It was a good day.
I cannot imagine being locked in a room with a whole bunch of other people for 6 hours doing just this.
No, it was intermittent breaks and whatnot. We got food, got drinks. We talked about their characters, where the story was going.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, for the most part, it was 6 hours.
6 hours with breaks, thank goodness.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. So when you're locked in this room for sessions, mm-hmm. who would be in there? Like, what kind of people would be in there?
Well, when you think of Dungeons & Dragons, which is one of the more primary and more popular games of the genre of our club, many people think of like a group of nerds just gathering around a table eating their chips and pizza and downing a gallon of Mountain Dew per second. But in reality, it's not quite like that at all. In fact, many popular celebrities such as Vin Diesel are massive fans of Dungeons & Dragons, and pretty much anybody can play, and most people will play if given the opportunity. It's not really a specific game for a specific kind of person, like maybe, say, Destiny 2 or Warframe, those kinds of MMO, PlayStation, Xbox kind of games.
Mm-hmm.
This is a game for anybody. It typically doesn't cost you anything because most of the materials can be found online, or you can create them yourself. But it's really just kind of something for everybody to play.
During this creation sort of process, how long does this usually take?
So when you're creating things as a DM, if you decide to create essentially your own world, this can take anywhere between like a week to a month to years even, depending on how much work you decide to put into it.
Mm.
World building can be very difficult for some people, especially those who don't have a lot of experience writing or creating kind of like game worlds or being in like a fantasy mindset.
Right.
However, it can and it probably will improve with practice and just actually doing it, putting in the time and effort to create something for your players.
Mm-hmm. How do the players like sign up? If there was a person out there who wanted to join this club, I cannot speak today. I apologize.
All right.
How would one sign up?
Well, The easiest way to do that would be to send either me or one of the other execs an email, or they could always look up our club name under the Get Connected page. We would be under rpgc@gmu. Those are pretty much the two easiest ways to find us. Everybody's welcome to show up to one of the meetings. They probably won't be able to participate right away because they need a character sheet beforehand, but they're always welcome to walk in and observe one of the sessions, or maybe just kind of see what we're doing during the primary session, where we pretty much go over our announcements, any changes that we're going over for the meeting for that day.
How long can they stay?
Members can stay for as long as they like, basically. we don't kick people out. As far as we know, we haven't had any issues in the club so far.
Oh, dear.
So, shouldn't be too bad. But people can stay for as long as they'd like to. Our meetings end at 10 usually, so typically a good time to leave. But it changes.
It just changes?
Yeah, it's variable. I mean, sometimes sessions will go over, sometimes they'll go under. It really just kind of depends on how the players are feeling, how the DM is feeling. It's always variable.
Mm-hmm. Why was this group made?
Why? Wow, that's an interesting story, actually.
So, really?
I guess this club came to be because last year, my freshman year, a group of the people on my floor and some other people on the floor below us, I convinced them to try D&D out. None of them, well, maybe one of them had played beforehand, but had never really gotten like a full experience, and the rest of them had never played before, but they'd all heard of it and wanted to give it a shot. So I had played 2 games of Dungeons & Dragons before doing this for the first time, really. It was my first time being an actual Dungeon Master. Excuse me. And after playing through that first session, kind of me getting used to being a Dungeon Master, creating this universe and helping my players get through it, and them playing through their characters, learning every little thing about them and trying to figure out where they wanted to take themselves in future campaigns, was really just such an enjoyable experience that we decided to actually start up another campaign maybe 2 weeks later. And that was really kind of the whole start of me creating my own tabletop game and presenting that this year during the club's birthing. But I guess the main reason why the role-playing game club was created was because there wasn't one beforehand. Mm-hmm. There was some similar things, like we have an anime and game club on campus, and we have a tabletop gaming club, which kind of also specializes in this thing, but it's very heavily leaning towards card games such as Magic the Gathering. But there wasn't anything that really focused on games like Dungeons and Dragons, so we decided that, hey, why not just make it ourselves? So over the summer, I really sat down, got everything I wanted to together, and I talked with my friends and associates that I had played with last year, and we decided just make it a thing.
Did you have to go through any like specific training or something to become a actual club here on campus?
Yes, there is actually a fairly lengthy process, which we just finished up recently. You have to go through various different things. You had to get your name set up and approved. You got to write an entire constitution, which takes forever. There's fiscal training, it's like money management and all that, because clubs do get funding, and they can also fundraise for additional monies throughout the year. You also have to do certain things, like presidents have to go to this thing called Summit, which is essentially just how to connect with other groups, how to be the most effective club possible, and just going through a lot of the tiny details that you might not get in some of the other online trainings.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, both the president and the treasurer have to go through an online quiz, just kind of making sure people know how to use the tools that they have available to them. And you have to get an 80% on that quiz in order to succeed on it.
Is it just the president and the treasurer?
For the most part, a lot of the requirements are focused around the president and the treasurer, because the treasurer is in charge of a lot of the money. So they need to know what they're doing, so there's not excessive spending. And the president is also the hierarchy, like it's the top of the list. So they need to know everything, and they need to be on the top of their game, basically. For the other officer positions, it's mostly just up to the president to make sure that they're up to the task and that they're doing their jobs. So it's kind of implied that you would go over the Constitution and what you did as the president, so that way they know what to do in case you're not available.
Oh, okay. So I remember you mentioning about, like, figuring out how to be a dungeon master. Mm-hmm. How long did that take, and what did that entail?
Figuring out how to be a dungeon master. Wow. That's a great question.
Oh, well, thank you.
My first, like, not real attempt, but it was my first attempt at dungeon mastering was actually right after my first D&D session.
And this was the one that you were talking about that sort of started this whole thing?
It was actually before. It was before I even came to college.
Oh, okay.
It was at my house during the summer beforehand, and a friend of mine, Jacob, he'd been playing for years, so he was my first DM, and I was like, I could probably do this. You know, I'm pretty confident in my improvisation skills.
That's good.
Did not go well. God awful.
Really?
It was terrible. I was honestly embarrassed, but I think the biggest reason why it went so poorly was because when you play Dungeons and Dragons, they give you a book, and that book has basically the entire adventure laid out for you. It's a linear story. So I didn't know anything in that book. I was basically reading it word for word as we went through it. And in order to be a successful DM based off of that system, you have to have essentially the entire thing memorized so you know what to do, where to go. And you kind of refer to it for the incredibly intricate details.
Mm-hmm.
So I hated that. I thought that was dumb. I thought, what if my players decide to do something crazy right at the beginning and it doesn't follow anything that the rest of the story says? So...
Right.
You kind of had to accommodate for that, but with a linear story, you can't really do that.
Right, yeah.
So with becoming a DM for the first time, I had adopted 5e's rule set, Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition, or 5e for short.
Mm-hmm.
I had adopted their rule set, got familiar with how the mechanics worked, but I decided, hey, these stories are dumb. I'm going to use my story.
So you created your own story?
Yeah. Basically, and I decided to take it in a non-linear direction, essentially saying there are going to be specific events that happen, but these events are not influenced by the players in any point in time. So, say one of them dies at the very beginning.
Right.
There's going to be this character that's extremely important being born no matter what.
Okay.
So, whether or not they come across that character's birth or whether or not they ever meet that character is entirely up to them. But
right.
No matter what, that character is going to be there and is going to influence their story in some way. Whether that's major or minor is really just up to them. Their decisions make their own story, but there's always an underlying story going on.
So there's this... I'm trying to wrap my head around this real quick. There are specific events that will happen no matter what, but it doesn't really matter what else happens. There could be other side stories, but all of these other things happen.
Precisely.
Okay, I see now. Speaking of stories, are there any fun stories of being a dungeon master or any stories in general that you have with Dungeons and Dragons?
There are so many. I guess one of the bigger ones that I'm sure many of my club members, either if they don't know about it already, they will. Because something that I like to do as a dungeon master is I like to tie in everybody's stories together because they're all part of the same universe. So
right, that makes sense.
Every character, whether or not they're in the same session, usually shows up in somebody else's session in one way or another.
So if you are a dungeon master in someone else's session, like, and they're two different sessions, someone else from a different session may come into another one?
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so, for instance, there is a character in one session that goes by the name of Eocene. So, at any point in time, if, say, I'm running a session back home where my friends don't know anybody up on campus, she might just show up and do things with their characters, and whether or not that gets prolonged, we'll see, but that's up to the players, essentially.
Wouldn't the character who's moving sessions, would the player of said character have to be, like, acknowledged? Like, would they, if this becomes, like, a backstory or something, would they have to know about this later?
Typically, the way I do the player crossovers is I'll mention to the original owner of the character that, hey, you were in this story, and
okay.
What typically happens is that because of the way I have my story set up, everything is kind of non-canon. So basically mm-hmm. anything can happen, but it won't affect that underlying story that we talked about earlier.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So what was the story that you were going to tell us?
So in my first campaign that I DM'd in college,
mm-hmm.
My roommate Seth was playing a monk character, and they were in the desert currently.
That's an interesting place to be.
Well, it's a lovely setting full of tombs and crazy dwarves.
Yeah.
His character and his party were in the desert, and I believe they were fighting an elephant, which they dubbed Babar, because that was the first thing that they killed during that session. And it was kind of like a landmark achievement. This is like the first out of everything. He failed a roll, which means that he rolled a 1 on a d20, which ones are considered critical failures and is always funny but never good. He rolled a 1 and got sand in his eyes.
Oh no.
Causing him to go blind for a few turns.
Oh no.
This became a running joke because he kept rolling ones, and every time he did, no matter where he was, he would get sand in his eyes.
So, really?
Yes.
So they could be like in the rainforest or mm-hmm. something, and he gets sand in his eyes.
Yep. He would trip and fall into a river, even if there was no river there. And he would get sand in his eyes.
Really?
We would make it happen. Like, it's become such a joke now that it just has to happen.
Is this still a thing? Do you still work with Seth?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh my gosh. Does he still roll ones occasionally?
All the time.
All the time?
All the time.
He's just an unlucky person.
It's guaranteed at least once per session.
Oh man. And whenever he rolls a 1, he gets sand in his eyes.
Yep.
Is it his eye or is it eyes?
Eyes.
Both of them?
Both of them.
Wow. That is a crazy story.
It's pretty great, honestly.
One
of our most famous jokes so far.
Oh, boy. What about another one? One more.
I think this is a good one.
Oh, boy.
It's going to get a little graphic, so get prepared. So back home, I play with my two friends, Trey and Connor. And
okay.
Both of them... We've all known each other for a couple of years. We're all pretty close. We get really into these kinds of things. So they're playing a campaign where they're working for a guy known as the Dark Lord. And they end up on a mission to essentially try to secure the... how would I put this? They're trying to secure trade rights with a local village.
Okay.
In an unknown territory. This territory happens to be Trey's character's birthplace, which he was exiled from.
Oh, dear.
So he goes back there and meets with his parents that abandoned him, essentially. But they're both basically on their deathbeds.
Oh, that's not good.
No, it's not. To make matters worse, both of his parents are being possessed by the Dark Lord and his mistress.
That's worse.
Yes, yes it is. So he kind of had a bit of a falling out with the Dark Lord, despite him working for him. That comes into play a little bit later. Connor's character, on the other hand, loves the Dark Lord and his family.
Oh, good.
So he gets a task to essentially assassinate the war chief of a rival village. Well, Trey's character, his father died, so he became the new chieftain, as is law. So he's like, I want to try and bring my village back to former glory and remove the dark presence from it. While Connor's character is like, you do that, I'm going to go do this other thing. Doesn't tell Trey. So during the middle of the night, Trey's character is asleep. Connor goes out to assassinate this rival village leader. Gets into the house and pulls back his bow. And he rolls so high on the damage that the arrow goes through the chieftain, through his wife, and then pins the baby in the crib next to their bed to the wall.
Whoa!
So...
did he roll like a 50 on a d20?
More or less. Something like that. It was a bit unintended, but the Dark Lord's minions loved it because I mean, it's the Dark Lord after all.
Of course.
So, it's a bit extreme. He comes back, acts like nothing happened. Well, both villages immediately start a civil war because a baby died.
Right.
As is life. Unfortunately, Trey doesn't have the time to calm anybody down because he gets another assignment from the Dark Lord to go quell a lich in a village on the other side of the world. They get teleported there, and the Dark Lord's second in command says, "Hey, your friend here killed a baby and started that civil war. Have fun." And he disappears. Both of them are kind of awkward for the rest of the day, I guess is the best way to put it. So they're heading up to this village that is being kind of overrun by the lich. And as they get to the outskirts of the village, there is a giant cliff face that they have to climb up and a pool of lava beneath it.
Oh dear.
Yeah. Trey's character is a bird, so he can fly. Right. No biggie. Connor's character is not a bird, so he can't fly. Kind of a big deal. Trey is still incredibly upset at Connor.
Right.
But I don't know if that justifies what happened. So
oh, dear.
Connor begins climbing this rock face, and he slips.
Oh, no.
He's about to fall down. He's holding on by three fingers. And so he asks, "Trey, help me out, man. I need your help. Please, just come get me." Trey's like, "I don't know, man. You killed a baby." So I give him three chances. I say, "Roll for it." Trey gets a 19 on the first roll.
Okay.
He has the option to save him.
Okay.
He decides to hesitate.
Okay.
I give him a second chance. Rolls a 15. Still succeeds the roll. Still hesitates. Connor's like, "Please, don't make me fall into this lava." Trey's like, "Fine." He rolls again, gets a 3, fails the roll. Connor falls into the pit of lava.
Oh, no!
He doesn't die. He does not die, but he's clinging on for dear life. And he loses all of his equipment and both of his legs.
Oh, no.
Trey picks him up, puts him on his shoulders. They both fly to the village. They're both pissed at each other.
Oh, wow.
Yep. So.
Are they still upset to this very day?
I mean, Connor is still a bit salty. Trey and I find it hilarious. But both of their characters, in a sense, are still kind of like, kind of at odds.
Right, yeah.
So.
All right. Well, thank you. This has been great. Mm-hmm. I have learned a lot.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad. Is there any way people can contact you?
Yeah, of course.
To get in touch for the role-playing game club?
Mm-hmm. So, again, if you'd like to get in contact with us or sign up for the role-playing game club, you can go to our Get Connected page. It's getconnected.gmu.edu and just search up role-playing game club at George Mason University or RPGC at GMU. You can also email me at jcromar2, that's J-C-R-O-M-A-R-2, the number 2, at masonlive.gmu.edu, and I will get back to you day of or the day after.
Thank you so much. This has been very informative.
All right. Thanks for having me.